Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Wow, what a sham. I mean, what a bunch of morons. Chelsea are pulling out of the Super League. I thought they'd last a week. I thought this whole thing might at least make the weekend. But no, it would seem as protesters are gathering at Stamford Bridge this evening. All of the heavyweights in the UK football media are reporting that Chelsea are currently drafting word that they will be leaving the Super League post-haste. We'll be speaking across the show to Tony Evans on the Liverpool situation, Dominic Fifield, who covers the London clubs, and Sam Lee, who covers Man City as well. A lot of people thought Man City would be first to go. They were lukewarm in this whole thing, along with Chelsea. Chelsea have gone first. So all of that coming between now and 10 o'clock. Elsewhere, should say, a brilliant day in the pool for Mona McSharry. She has qualified for the Olympics. We'll chat to Mona around 8:30. Plus, recorded this earlier on, so there'll be no Super League talk. But we'll be checking in with Andy Reid, former Irish international, making his way in the world of coaching, dealing with retirement, the death of both parents, and doing very well now as well. But really interesting chat coming your way with Andy Reid. 53106. Is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormick, hello to you.
Oh, those Russians, Joe. Never trust them.
Adrian Barry, hello.
Joe, Richie, how we doing?
What a sham. What an embarrassment.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Like you said, I figured that it would last longer than a week. The question is, I know you're saying Chelsea are saying that they want to pull out of the competition, is whether they actually can. Because depending on who you talk to, there are rather lengthy term contracts involved in this Super League farrago. So whether or not Chelsea have the wherewithal to have a break clause inserted or have that already inserted and whether they can activate it now is another story. But there's going to be a lot of wrangling, legal or otherwise, going on with all this. If I was a cynic, though, I'd say that this has all been something of a ruse. There was, I don't know if anybody saw this earlier on, it was RMC journalist Mohamed Bouhafsi. Tweeted earlier on to say that UEFA have essentially stepped up in line of all this. You mentioned all the figures that were behind this Super League yesterday, Joe, and the millions and millions that have been acquired from JP Morgan and had been speculated in media rights, and basically said that UEFA have gone to a UK-based investor to seek similar funding, and they've already also accessed a line of credit that would see them, if not able to match, then at least compete fairly well with what the Super League top brass were offering. And this seems to be where it was headed all along. It was a game of brinksmanship.
Yeah, although surprising Man City went along with it. They seem to be lukewarm. Like Gary Neville made the point last night, why would City want this hassle? They're trying to sports wash their way into everybody's good books. Why would they go along with this unpopularity concept?
It's the same with Abramovich and Chelsea. I mean, Abramovich hasn't actually been able to attend a home Chelsea game, pandemic or otherwise, for the last couple of years, given the rather fractious nature of the relationship between Russia and Great Britain. And I don't think, I'm not a cynical type as well, you know, Joe, but I don't think that Chelsea's decision to withdraw has come on the same day that Boris Johnson threatened to drop a legislative bomb on those involved in this thing, when essentially Russia would like very much to cozy up to Prime Minister Johnson, and Roman Abramovich would like, I'd imagine, to be able to return to Stamford Bridge when everybody else is allowed to return to Stamford Bridge. I don't think they're unconnected, those two statements.
Maybe not. I mean, I just think they've freaked out. I think they've all freaked out at the frenzied reaction and they've bottled it. I think that's ultimately what's happened. And they've looked at, you know, they didn't have their ducks in a row. They didn't have the Germans. They didn't have PSG. They jumped the gun on all this. And then the frenzied reaction meant that they weren't in a good starting position to begin with, was all the more devastating, the frenzied reaction. And so they've jumped ship, Adrian. I mean, it just seems like incompetency. I mean, even the way the whole thing was announced on the Sunday evening with the terrible logo and, you know, different statements on different websites, and it wasn't a coherent unveiling. Like, they should have all been together in some stage, like those silly Apple or Microsoft launches where, you know, men in jeans dance around and punch the air, and had something a bit slicker. Instead, it was like this, well, it was a mishmash on Sunday evening. They were never set up to do this or to take on UEFA the way they were trying to.
I totally agree with that last point, by the way, but I wouldn't put it down to incompetence at all. I really subscribe to the theory that this is the first move in a game of chess, and like that the website and the logo and all this sort of stuff was all like this today. I have to say, this all looks like hindsight now that it's been confirmed the last while that Chelsea are doing what they're going to do, and I presume the rest will follow suit. But I was definitely thinking about this afternoon in light of coming on here to chat to you lads this evening, and definitely thinking the more I thought about it that this really is just a game of chess. So like, what the end point of that is, I don't know. Is it that they, in a couple of months' time, reveal a different plan that is a bit more of a meritocracy, and suddenly everybody's like, oh, okay, actually, this doesn't look so bad after all. Whereas actually, if they were to reveal that as plan A, it might have looked slightly worse. Is it, as Richie's alluding to, that actually it's just to squeeze more money out of UEFA, and that ultimately that's going to fall their way? Now, I'm not sure, but I think given the nature of the people we're dealing with, like, they're not idiots. Like, these are very wealthy business people who have been very smart about their business decisions up to this point, and I wouldn't subscribe to the...
They haven't. Like, their business decisions, hang on. Barcelona are broke. Real Madrid are broke. The Italian clubs have no money. Like, let's not confer genius on these lads.
Their structures, particularly Barcelona, are slightly different to the likes of Liverpool or Manchester United or maybe some more of those English clubs. I mean, obviously you can bring Chelsea into the conversation and wonder about how that wealth comes about.
Would you say the way Man United has been run over the last 7-8 years has been done in a very smart way? Like, what are we basing this intelligence on?
Money intelligence might be very different from street smarts, right? For a start. So, like, maybe there's a misstep with fans. But again, I mean, I think that they are surely smart enough to know, like, a lot of these owners, obviously, Liverpool and some of the other clubs are involved in sports elsewhere. They understand the dynamic of fans. Like, I think the idea that they would have taken this step and not know that there was going to be a massive fans backlash, I think is just, I genuinely wonder
if they misjudged their own fans. I mean, they knew the Leicesters and the Evertons and the masses would be disgusted. I'm not sure they were banking on protests by their own fans outside their own clubs.
Doesn't it all, Joe, when you stack it all up, doesn't it all look like you talk about the website, the logo, the launch, the jumping ahead of some other clubs, the, like, what's been described as the lack of understanding of the fans.
Yeah.
Couldn't all that just fit into a theory that this was all just a ruse?
That's an interesting question. I do think they were chancing their arm, and I think if they had received an okay enough reaction, they might have proceeded with this. Ultimately, look, I think me and Rich were in agreement last night. This was never going to go anywhere. And I never for a second thought this was going to get off the ground. There were just too many moving parts, too many obstacles. The fact PSG and Bayern and Dortmund were against it from the off meant this had no chance, really. But I do think where we're headed, and this is part of it one way or another, we're headed for a situation where these 12 or these 15 do get guaranteed Champions League spots every year. And the other, so that's 15 from, and then 36. So the remaining 21 odd places are fought for by in some kind of meritocracy. Like, it has gone under the radar that the reform announced on Monday UEFA did allow for two places. I think they put it, what was the word they used? Pedigree.
Legacy.
Pedigree.
Yeah,
if you had a European pedigree, then there might be a way in, i.e., here, listen.
Nottingham Forest get in. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
Not quite. Agnelli, no. Glazer. Liverpool would have got that. Liverpool would have been in the Champions League next year under these new reforms by dint of pedigree. if they had failed to make the top four. Yes, Leicester would have been in, but Liverpool would have got in. So I think if in your in answer to your question, my guess is, look, there's probably there was a degree of this was first move, and geez, they went all in. I mean, it was a hell of a first move. But I do think we were always headed towards 15 to 18 clubs guaranteed Champions League football every year, and the other 20 fight it out. I think that's where we're headed pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think so, and I think that UEFA have to respond, obviously, to this with some sort of a something. And we've, as you said, we've seen that, and I was that little line that was tucked away, and that thing that was, you said, it was yesterday it came out.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it. Looking at it, I was like, oh my god, yeah. I mean, this is the version of the same thing.
I have more breaking news.
Go for it,
Martin Lipton. Manchester City are pulling out of the Super League. Who's going to be next? I mean, you don't want to be last. You don't want to be last.
There was great credit to being first out of the blocks.
Yeah. Can we now have a vote on who's last? And will they even bother announcing?
I love the idea, though, and Richie has outlined why, but the idea that they have to ask, can we not press ahead with this thing that we haven't yet pressed ahead with? Can we just put the reverse lights on? By the way, I would make the point, and I was watching the football last night, that if it was, and as you know by now, I don't subscribe to the theory that it was a serious thing, they really should have timed it at a time when Liverpool weren't playing in such close proximity within the 24 hours, given that, you know, the credibility that somebody like Jurgen Klopp carries. He's going to be out in front of the media. He's already put on record his thoughts on it. I do think that a lot of people were looking at that programme last night, listening to Jurgen Klopp, listening to Sky's main pundits, listening to James Milner after the game. And I think that, you know, the word organised was used quite a bit. And I think that people were taking a lot of, you know, maybe people who were less, who weren't down the road as far as you were, Joe, in terms of whether this was going to happen or not. And were looking at that and taking great heart from the idea that somebody of Klopp's stature and Milner's stature would come out and say, listen, we're not into it. Yeah. I think if you were to time it, get a Tottenham or somebody like that who's less likely to, I mean, secretly Tottenham are all kind of presumably
they'll never pull
sort
out
of like closing themselves away, going, oh yes, this is great, this is,
Spurs and Arsenal are pressing ahead with their plan for Super League.
What a joke.
Isn't it such a joke? I mean, it's great fun though.
If it wasn't so serious, it'd be
embarrassing. I guess no harm done. No harm done at this stage.
Do we have to hold Sheikh Mansour and Roman Abramovich up as paragons of virtue tonight? Is that what we're doing?
And
Nasser Al Khelaifi,
Paris
Saint Germain.
Sheikh Mansour. On your theory, Richie, about why they would go in, I presume it was just that we're all sitting around and all the other lads were like, we're heading to the bar up the road. Seems to be good crack, free bar. We all head. I like it here, but you're listening. Come
well, on.
On
Sunday, when Martin Ziegler first posted the piece, there was a question mark over whether or not City were part of it. And then he clarified it in a later tweet that Man City were now part of it. So that suggested they certainly weren't leading it. And then they got to a certain point when they heard the clubs who were involved and they thought, well, OK, look, we'll go along with it then. So there was always, I think, a reticence on City's part.
Yeah. And it's, look, why would they? Like, it isn't the point was made last night. They don't need the money. I mean, I know they're in it for obviously reasons of making themselves and their country look better on the international stage or whatever. But I don't think this particular project has served to tick that box.
Monday Night Football, Adrian, was electric last night. I mean, I went home afterwards and watched the whole thing because it just seemed like it was so unmissable. And in fairness, it was awesome.
Even like I make the point there about it being Liverpool that are on the TV that night, and the, you know, the power of somebody like Klopp, even for non-Liverpool fans, I think that he carries such credibility in the game that I think a lot of people were, I was certainly sitting at the edge of my seat to see what he'd have to say about it. And it was great. Like, it was just brilliant watch, and the two lads getting stuck in, and Carragher after the game was like, oh, when we came in here at 2 o'clock, I was pretty nervous about this thing was going ahead. I feel much better about it now. He had like, it was having the lads that all talked each other around. But it was a very open, and like they didn't shy away from the whole Sky question and all of that sort of stuff. And I thought Dave Jones handled it very well.
Yeah.
Thought it was a good show.
It's not easy actually to handle that from Dave Jones' perspective, because the lads are full of brilliant rhetoric. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean, like, they're wonderful speakers and they'll go for 2-3 minutes and say amazing stuff. And as a viewer, a viewer, you just want them to keep, you're like, say something else. And so Dave Jones has to think of new questions effectively just to get them to say more of the same stuff. And in fairness to him, he kept it going. I think here's an interesting question now to get ahead of ourselves. So this thing's dead in the water. This thing's over. What really interests me now is, has something more serious started for those owners? I'm thinking in particular of the way Gary Neville went after the Glazers last night. They want booting out of the club and they want booting out of the country. So these owners have shown themselves up for what they are. Now, in my book, I'm amazed anyone was surprised that this is what they were about. But look, it seems like fans are shocked at the fact that these money men wanted more money. But, you know, Neville is talking about the Glazers who bought this club, a leverage buyout, have milked it for hundreds of millions for personal profit. Malcolm Glazer never stepped foot in Old Trafford once. I hadn't realised that actually until today. Wow. Yeah, I just assumed Malcolm Glazer had been to Old Trafford once. He passed away in 2014, but from 05 to 14, he never thought to himself, I've bought this huge club, I should hop on a plane once just to have a look around. Never did. So that tells you all you need to know about their relationship with it. I wonder, will that kind of talk from Neville, who last night said he felt complicit, I wonder if this all just stops now. And I'm not so sure you can put the genie back in the bottle if you're Gary Neville when it comes to the Glazers.
They have to face action. Like, the people who are involved in this, whether they're the Glazers, whether they're John W. Henry, whether they're, you know, Sheikh Mansour, Roman Abramovich, Daniel Levy, whomever. Like, they can't just withdraw from this thing and say, do the whole Men in Black shining the light in your eyes. Okay, everything's forgotten, everything's grand. Like, they took the piss here to an extraordinary level, to the point where their own league were contemplating kicking them out. You know, it might have been temporarily, but at least that discussion was had. And that can't just be left for dead and they all move on as if nothing has ever happened. Action needs to actually be taken here, and a decent look at, I mean, this plays into, you know, the Neville thing plays into a bigger conversation about the fit and proper persons and whether people have the actual resources and wherewithal to properly fund a club when they buy it. I mean, that conversation needs to properly be had, and Newcastle is the going concern as regards that. But yeah, I mean, they can't just walk away from this and pretend that nothing happened. They have to face a bit of a boot in the hole for the whole kit and caboodle.
We should I don't think they will.
I just think that it'll be, come on into the room, lads, now. Come on back into the pub. You should have known that place up the road was going to be shut by the time you got there. Come on back in now, and we'll give you a round on the house.
Yeah.
And it'll be all good. I mean, there's been all sorts of, there's loads of stuff going on. I think it's been like a great conversation. It's opened the door to a great conversation about football, and almost holding a mirror up to itself. And I think, pulling the scales from the eyes, I think, as well, of a lot of fans who might have been on the fence about the why some of these owners are involved. But I mean, you've had all sorts of stuff. I watched the, I don't know, did you watch the 6.5 minutes, is it, of James Corden soliloquy on the...
No,
Joe, please do. I beg of you at some point,
I've been listening to all of Jim White and Simon Jordan for 3 hours every morning to stay abreast of things, and that's done me in.
Just even seeing Corden come out against the Super League made me want to, you know, vehemently support it. By the way, to an audience that doesn't care, James Corden, in tears, to an audience that don't care.
Before the breaking news, he on his thing, right, he said, he got to the end of his bit and he was like, don't make any mistake about it, these wealthy businessmen have wrestled this football, which is now so pure and so beautiful, from the hands of the... I'm like, oh man,
such nonsense.
Be kidding me, like,
on, such now. Nonsense. Breaking news, go on, Richie.
Word is Atletico Madrid are becoming the third domino to fall, and they are looking to also get out of this absolute shit show of a Super League.
Genuinely, who's last? That is now the question. You know, Juve and the Glazers, we'll say.
It's Agnelli on his own going, lads, come back. I've got a couple of bottles of Peroni on the go here. Come on, let's get wankered. It's going to be him on his own.
All clubs apparently are meeting at the minute to discuss disbanding it. I mean, this is all just consistent with the theory that it was never a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd like, if there's an old wrestling adage that goes, if it's on TV, it's a work, which basically means if it has made it in front of a camera, then it's not for real. And I would suggest that pretty much all of this has been one massive Mickey take.
It would have been leaked. There would have been a leak at some point. It would have been, oh, they're meeting to discuss this thing. They jumped the gun on it. Like the whole, honestly, the logo stuff and the crappy website. Like it's really
there was a line from Sean Ingle yesterday. He'd gotten a further kind of document about, you know, the details of the Super League. And there was a line in it that really jumped out at me. Said people, you know, who were involved in coding this thing will be really angry that it was so easy to come across. Nothing like, but something's only easy to come across if you make it easy to come across on purpose. And these details were leaked. The website was crap. The notifications were rubbish on purpose. This was made to look bad from the get-go on purpose. And I don't think anything you're seeing now is anything that we shouldn't have expected, really.
Mm. Yeah. They're all sitting around the table at this minute going, ooh, what do we do? Should we disband? Okay, then. But it's par for the course, I think.
There is, though, I mean, we should get on to the news, or Richie, you can run us through bullet points in just a second. I guess this is the news we're talking about. If you're just tuning in, the Super League's dead, basically. Chelsea, an hour ago now, the news broke that they were, as Richie blesses himself, their drafting word that they were withdrawing. Man City have pulled out, and now, was it Atletico, you say, are next? And I guess it's done, it's over, it's an embarrassment. But Tony Evans is on the way after 9 o'clock. We recorded this chat earlier on, so it has dated horribly, obviously. But there's some interesting stuff in it, because it does get to the heart of this like willful delusion that seems to have been at play on behalf of so many fans. Like, I'm amazed that this was the moment where fans said, oh, clubs don't care about us, you know? Like, on TalkSport this morning, on the aforementioned Simon Jordan, Jim White bonanza, Farhad Moshiri, the Everton chairman, was on owner. And I quote, he said, this makes football a money game, end quote. I thought, what?
Well, as opposed to...
what? Like, so like, kickoff times, other side of the country for fans on Tuesday nights, or to suit Asian markets, the salaries, the inequality, the Champions League, all on BT behind terrestrial television. And even, you know, I brought this up with Tony Evans, the behaviour of Liverpool towards the residents around the stadium for decades, nothing short of a disgrace. So from the mid-1990s, they instigated a policy of buying the houses around the ground and leaving them empty. It was a concerted thing. And it wasn't just one owner. It wasn't like they could just pin it on that owner. He was evil. Three different ownerships across this period. And this ethos flowed through the club. You know, David Kahn did brilliant work on it for The Guardian. Talked about years of dereliction, stagnation, decline, crime, fires, vandalism. People like Loher Road, he mentions, backs onto the Anfield main stand. One man who lived next door to a house Liverpool own and have left empty, or tinned up, as the locals call it. He shook his head. He said, I'm not moving out. I've been driven out. So the clubs used agencies or used third parties to buy the houses, who then sold them back to the club very quickly. Resident there said this wasn't a natural decline in the area. It was engineered. As you can imagine, housing prices plummeted, and people had to live next door to, you know, empty houses which were vandalised and all sorts going on. The land registry showed that between January 96 Liverpool and March 2000 even, Liverpool bought 10 houses on Loher Road alone. These tinned up houses, empty for up to 15 years, all to build a new stand. Now to me, like, that's in the area. That's where, like, the match going fan must know that's going on. For me, that's way more egregious than the Super League, you know? So I don't know, Adrian, like, it's been amazing to hear people saying, oh, well, this shows they don't give a damn about us.
Yeah, well, even listening to Andy Mitten and Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap on with the lads on AM this morning, they were definitely talking about that disparity between the local fans and the international fans. Mm. And, you know, how the, like your point about the Glazers earlier, like how much of a toss do they give anymore about the local fans is probably something that, I mean, that what you're talking about there is pretty damning evidence that they couldn't give two hoots about them. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's remarkable that I think in this country we hold a degree of cynicism about those types of things, and I don't know if that's quite the right word either, but you know what I'm getting at, like, in a way that we're not, I don't think we quite have the wool pulled over our eyes as easy maybe as maybe some others. So maybe it's not sort of new news to us, but it is. I mean, I don't know. The question that Richie raises is an interesting one. How much it impacts now on fans' relationships with, even listening to Gareth Roberts, as I said, at the Anfield Wrap earlier on OTBAM, talking about like looking at the game last night and not really been like, you know, you can't focus on the game. You're not really that interested or invested anymore in the outcome of it. How much damage has all this done to that level of fan? Does everybody just forget about it really quickly and everybody moves on with life?
I think so.
No. Interesting.
I think they do, actually. Yeah,
I think or in the past there are bits and pieces. If it had gone on in individual clubs, or if one or two had been involved in this thing, I think you might be right, Joe. But I think the fact that it's been spread across six Premier League clubs, another three, whatever it is in Spain, and then on across into Europe, this has kind of made a lot of football fans ask a question: what am I actually getting back from that lot that I'm supporting?
I hear you. Not a lot. I think the owners will be deeply unpopular. But I think, take Liverpool, for instance, they will look at Klopp and the lads and they will say, well, we support them. That's what we're supporting here. And our bond is with them. And John Henry will, you know, his name will be a little bit dirty around Merseyside for a while, maybe the rest of his tenure. But then again, if he buys a few players and they start winning a few more trophies, and then he'll be redeemed over time. But I think the supporters will look at the thing and say, well, we support Klopp, we support the lads, we support Hendo, and it's us on the terrace. That's what Liverpool is. And I think they get pretty quickly back to that. But it probably damages the owner.
I think that's all well and good if the club are actually doing well. If Liverpool are in the position they were at this time last year, I think that relationship with the manager and with the players, as you mentioned, remains untouched. But if they're struggling, the fans are back in the stadiums at the moment, it's a completely different ballgame. Because the reaction to this would obviously be more vociferous. But I think generally when they do come back, and they are going to start trickling back, and they will be back by August when the season starts next year, if there are teams doing badly, the relationship between the fans and the club is going to be exacerbated by the fact that they were involved in this thing prior to the season ending.
Yeah, maybe.
And that they wanted to get away. And if you have an Arsenal struggling down in 9th or 10th by the first week in September, or Tottenham doing the same under a new manager, or even Liverpool as well, as you mentioned there, things could get ugly.
I think you'll see Glazers out, you'll see Henry out potentially if things went awry. I think he's more credit in the bank somehow. I think you'll see that kind of stuff, maybe. Yeah. But I don't think you'll see boycotts of matches, Adrian. I wouldn't think so.
No, I agree with all that, yeah. I think that it will give... And look, it just depends what the next step is. It depends what the end game is. Is it to, in 2 months' time, release... You know, the Super Clubs release something else. The Super League releases something else that's a watered-down version of this. Or are they just back in with UEFA? Like, by the way, those owners couldn't give two hoots. Do you think Glazers care less about fans holding up Glazers out posters?
No.
Like, if they're willing to do this, you can rest assured they could give two hoots about 50,000 fans standing outside Old Trafford with fans saying Glazers out.
Like, can you imagine the Glazers over brunch this morning and one of their Manny staff coming up saying, geez, they're going mad over there in England. Gary Neville's going off on the TV. I mean, can you imagine their reaction? Like, and your point is, I mean,
who's Gary Neville?
Well, indeed. Although, geez, the way Neville spoke about Joel, I'm doing a deep dive on Noel. He was like, I saw Joel and I knew this was serious. I mean, he made Joel Edwards, Joel Glazer out to be like an assassin. That was kind of the...
Joel is the one who was named on the Super League board, as far as I know. There are about four or five others.
But Neville was saying, when I saw Joel, I knew this was serious.
That man doesn't put his name on anything.
Oh. Like, it was amazing. So, look, Richie, as you can imagine, we've gone over there. The news round on Off the Ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. So, aside from Super League, do you want to give us bullet point a couple of bits and pieces? We've got about 4 or 5 minutes.
Tonight, Dundalk without a win and without a manager heading into tonight's SSE or Trinity Premier Division trip to Derry. The club confirmed the departures yesterday, of course, of Filippo Giovagnoli and Shane Keegan. Elsewhere this evening, leader Shamrock Rovers away to Drogheda United. St. Pat's unbeaten start is going to be tested by the visit of Kevin Sheedy's Waterford to Richmond Park. Bohemians are entertaining Sligo and Longford are up against Finn Harps, and all of those games have 7:45 starts. Hodor's Kilkenny await the winners of Leash and Wexford in the semi-finals of the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship. The other last four ties will see Galway play either Senior Dublin or McDonagh Cup winners Antrim. The draw has also been made this morning for the Leinster Senior Football Championship. Six in a row, All-Ireland champions Dublin will go to Wexford or Wicklow in the quarterfinals. Mickey Hart's first GAA Championship game in charge of Louth will see the Wee County play Offaly for the right to play Kildare in the last eight, while Meath will face either Carlow or Longford in the quarters, with the other last eight clash pitting Westmeath against Leash. Also, Ulster Championship draw made this evening too. Just going to bring you through that one as well. I'm trying to scan down through the mentions of the GAA and it's not coming up. We'll get to it in a little bit. But moving on, as you mentioned there, the new Guinness Pro 14 Rainbow Cup competition has been thrown into disarray before it's scheduled to start this weekend. The four teams from South Africa, the Bulls, Stormers, Lions and Sharks, oh my, are set to pull out, with locals reporting that they won't be able to come to Europe due to travel restrictions. They were due to start the competition with three rounds of domestic clashes before travelling to Europe for those games. Meanwhile, Munster, who faced Leinster in the competition on Saturday, could have second row Orji Snyman back in the squad. He's been out since August with a ruptured ligament. Mona McSharry and Daniel Whiffen both booked their places at this summer's Olympic Games today. McSharry set a new Irish record to qualify in the 100 metre breaststroke, while Whiffen shaved a whole 13 seconds off the national 800 metre freestyle record while also qualifying for Tokyo. Shane Ryan and Dara Green also posted qualifying times at the Irish Olympic trials today, but they both come under the tape earlier on in the year, and indeed in 2019. Seamus Power has been forced to withdraw from this week's Zurich Classic of New Orleans. The Waterford golfer has contracted COVID-19. Power must undergo a period of isolation and will receive the full support of the PGA Tour. Of course, his Olympic partner Padraig Harrington contracted the virus as well earlier this year. The English RFU today giving its backing to Eddie Jones to continue on as England head coach following a review into the team's disappointing fifth place finish in the Six Nations. Feedback was heard from players, coaches and support staff, as well as detailed presentations from the Australian himself. Okay. The RFU noted coaching team absences caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and some players were underprepared or fatigued as factors. And in the World Snooker Championships as well, Mark Allen has just taken an 8-2 lead over Liu Haoxian in the first round match at the Crucible.
Richie, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Adrian Barry, pleasure.
Cheers, lad.
Thanks, fellas. Short ad break and we're talking about the, former Super League next.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.